3, 2, 1.
Here we go. Welcome to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD, a marketing services firm that delivers the future to healthcare's leading brands. This show is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust. And instead, we celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, all focused around the future of healthcare marketing and communications. Hello, I'm your host, Stephanie Rearwell, EVP of Strategy and Engagement, and I'm joined by a very special host, a co-host and guest with us, Victoria Davis, Group Account Director at BPD.
Hello, hello, Stephanie. How's it going?
It's so good. I was just thinking when we say the powerful, the innovative, the bold, that is you, Victoria. You are perfect for this show. You are one of my favorite bold ones.
I try. And when I'm not feeling as bold, I just put on a bold lip and it just brings it out of me.
A bold lip. We all need a bold lip. Maybe instead of a hot one show, we should do a bold one show here at BPD.
Yes, let's do it.
With bold lips.
All the bold things.
Yes. So I'll just give a quick little rundown of our agenda here and then we'll get into it. First of all, Victoria, you brought forward some really interesting takeaways from the New York Marathon. So we'll talk about that. Then we'll get into a little bit of a deeper dive and from our recap we have just published around health, the health conference, which we were at and reporting from the ground. And then our main topic today, we're calling it halfway to 2030, which is a little exciting and scary at the same time. but we're going to talk about the predictions that we have made on this show in the past that are all around what how consumers will engage health and healthcare in 2030. So we're going to test ourselves and see how on track we are.
When will the day stop flying by? We're halfway to 2030. It's just wild.
Oof. Yes, we are. Yeah. I can't believe this year is over either. So I need to go meditate on that one too.
Deep pause.
First, a couple quick notes. Our BPD team is headed to Las Vegas again for the HCIC conference this weekend, and it is all happening and kicking off on Sunday, November 9th. But on November 10th, we will be leading a session with our friends from Baptist Health South Florida. So Valeska Valencia, Director of Reputation Management and Social Media at Baptist Health, we'll be leading a session along with Emily Baker from our engagement team and myself as well. And we'll be hosting a session called The Great Social Media Shakeup, all around trends that are happening in social media and how healthcare marketers should be prepared. Then we're also hosting a learning lab all about AI called Rethink, Rebuild, and Reinvent on Tuesday, November 11th. So sign up, join us there, and dig into all the brainstorms around how healthcare and healthcare marketing will change in an AI era. And speaking of, if you haven't registered for the Joe Public Retreat, we are taking our annual retreat to the shores of South Beach, Miami, Florida, to talk about the AI dream. So we'll be in the lab together, building out what an AI dream is going to actually tangibly be for healthcare marketing leaders. And that will include the one, the only Chris Bevelo, as well as Paul Raitzer from Marketing AI Institute and Smarter AI, Smarter X AI. So register if you haven't already at bpdhealthcare.com. So with that, Victoria, you had your eyes on the social media news feeds during the New York Marathon, and you shared that there are some really interesting takeaways for brands. Tell me all about it.
Oh my gosh. My feed was inundated. Probably beginning on Friday, the big marathon, this is the 55th one for the New York City Marathon, was on Sunday. And there's always a lot of brand and marketing and content, but I feel like it was on steroids this year, and everything was making me weepy and inspired at the same time. So we already know that there's going to be lots of brand partnerships. All the running groups are showing up, Strava and RunUp. But MasterCard had something really interesting where their creator partners started the race, I think, earlier than even the elite runners. So they were documenting the elite runners who were basically on the course by themselves. And so you saw the 10 or 12 of the female ones and the male ones. That's footage that we don't see as regular people. And it came from MasterCard, right? Not from a Strava or a RunUp. So that was interesting. But the biggest thing I think of all was like, we know that creators are going to be, you know, doing all the get ready with me's and 1 mile and 2 mile as they're going down, you know, the race course. But it was like the mini creators, or like the journalists who were literally covering the event, Stephanie. Like they were giving play-by-plays of like the energy, what the elite runners were doing, what brands were doing, what people were talking about. And I feel like it was literally bringing that NYC energy like straight to our phones. And I was thinking to myself, like, how do I do this next year or in 2027? Because I was inspired. I had major FOMO and I just wanted to like be one of the 10% of the population that's completed a whole marathon.
Wow. I love that take. I think that really ties into something we've been talking about a little bit on the social media front, which is that first person POV style is like what people are very hungry mm-hmm. for. Like we're kind of all over that highly polished, yeah. you know, of course, ad like objects. And so I love that you're saying that, you know, not only are unexpected brands capturing that content, but also and the POV, but also it's the people that yes. are the news coverage. And, you know, you're getting it from them first. That's really cool.
It was the largest marathon ever. They had almost 60,000 people who finished.
Wow.
Which is just wild to think about. So
the closest
I do it with you, Stephanie.
Let's go. No, seriously, let's go. We'll make a pact right now. Next year, we'll be there.
Yes. Same time, November 5th, okay. 2026.
And we can train on Peloton because Peloton has, they took the New York City Marathon. They ran it during the Elite Runner segment and recorded that first person POV. And they broke it down into, I think, 5 segments. So you don't have to run it all at once on the Peloton treadmill. You can just do like 1 segment at a time, which I think is really freaking cool.
You know, I'm obsessed with Peloton and everything that they do.
We both are.
Keep hope alive for them. Keep hope alive.
Yes. Well, I'm just going to say it sounds like a healthcare brand should have done a lot of what you just talked about. But, you know, next year.
There was such a big opportunity. What's interesting is that it was never about the destination, right? Which I think that's what the health experience is, what we're always talking about with our clients. It's the journey. It's how people are integrating fuel and nutrition and rest and so many things into their prep for the big race. And how great would it be if like one of our clients was like talking about how they were helping with like recovery or anything like that. There's just such big opportunity for a health system or a hospital to integrate themselves in a really seamless way. So
100%.
Maybe next year.
Yes. Okay. We're building up a lot of goals for ourselves today.
Yes.
So let's go to our next topic before we promise too much on the marathon front, including next thing you know, Victoria will be saying we're going to win it next year. So I don't know. We better move on.
Yes.
The next topic is a quick little takeaway from health. You were there last year, Victoria. We both.
I was. I had major FOMO watching you and Emily cover it through the normal live stream, but it looked amazing.
Well, it was. I think you and I both love it. It's just such a good moment to dream big. But I'll just give a very quick overview of one of our takeaways. So this is live on the BPD website, and you can dig into some of the links here. But it was really interesting to see and hear that the whole discussion of AI has moved a little bit from this idea of hype and vision into actual case studies. And that's not true across the board, right? But it was very much true for several organizations. And ones that you wouldn't expect, perhaps. So I'll just give some examples. My favorite was Houston Methodist shared their smart hospital pilot. And they had launched this or announced this a while back. But they were on stage talking about the outcome. And so the CEO unpacked everything from the fact that they have cameras in every single patient room. They have wearable monitors. They have ambient listening, of course. They have an AI command center where they can kind of check on everything that's happening across the entire hospital, along with all kinds of other interesting tech. And all of that together has actually delivered a measurable drop in mortality.
Wow.
Yeah, right?
Wow.
Of course, this is a very heavy lift. Like, it is a true entire yes. hospital that is equipped with smart technology. But I think what's so cool about it is, you know, just having this vision and actually running at it and actually saying, you know, what if we could do this? And then seeing something that's not just a business impact, although that would be phenomenal, but an actual health outcome.
Stephanie, do you think, given the data that we've seen around so many consumers not trusting, you know, healthcare in general, or like specifically hospitals and health systems, in what ways do you think this will help build that trust? Do you think people will like having literally more eyeballs on them, and so they feel like there's more attention to their care? Or will it be, you know, kind of Jetsons on steroids? How do we think people will respond?
Jetsons. I need a Rosie, but anyway. So I think that it's all about the message, and that's really where the marketer's job comes in, is how do you communicate what the patient gets from this? And so I think that, you know, I'll just anecdotally say, here's my opinion, but then maybe give an example. As a patient, you always want to know that, let's say you're going into heart surgery, the reason why you're so obsessed with maybe your physician's creds at that moment for a very, very, very high acute care need is because you want to make sure you have a great, you know, outcome. You want to live through it. And I think, like, when we can say, hey, we have all this technology that we've implemented alongside our physician that makes your outcome better. That's not the words to use with patients, but that makes, you know, makes it so that we have a higher success rate. I feel like, who's going to say no to that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Who's going to say no to? And I think what's interesting is it's probably going to uncover some of, like, body language, like things that are missed when physicians are taking, you know, their notes and things like that, that will be so helpful to hospitals and health systems retaining their patients from, like, those soft skills that many people have said in research has been lost. We called that back in the day, I'm aging myself, bedside manners, but I think it's still important. It'll give people a real life, a live stream, if you will, of how people's bedside manners really are from an unbiased take. So I think this is going to be great.
Totally.
Hopefully it'll happen by 2030.
Yeah, I love it. So that's just, we probably just have the time for that one example. But in the blog post we shared many more, including Advocate Health and their Copilot launch, Atrium Health with their Ambient Scribes examples, Hackensack Meridian Health, who has a Google Cloud partnership. Yeah. GE, which has partnerships with Duke and Queens Health Systems, and there are many, many more examples. One of the Google Cloud leaders was on the stage talking about their many partnerships, including the HCA partnership. So we love when two of our amazing clients come together in one way. So there's a lot of case studies here. And I think if you're a health system marketer and you're looking for clinical examples, the list is very long at this point.
Highly recommend everyone listening go to HLTH. It is a fantastic conference, and it gives you hope and inspires you. And it's just great overall for connecting with people who have big blue sky thinking.
Totally. Couldn't have said it better. Okay, let's go to our main topic here. So as we were bemoaning, we are halfway to 2030. And as we close out 2025, and by the way, I should say halfway to 2030, meaning when the book Joe Public 2030 was written, we now are halfway to that point of where we can actually see, you know, how right or wrong are we? And so it's a really good moment to kind of take a step back and say, where are we on all of these? And as folks know who have been longtime listeners, we've been keeping track on our Predictometer page. So you can go to the Predictometer and see green, yellow, red, orange. What color are these? So why don't we start with the first one? And I think, Victoria, it's one of both your and my favorites.
Yes.
So let's start with the Copernican consumer. And just to give a brief reminder, the Copernican consumer is all about how consumers will become the center of the health universe more than ever before, enabled by sensors, AI, wearables, technologies, as well as services that empower them. So think, here I am at my desk, and I'm surrounded by smart light bulbs and smart rings and smart glasses, but also I have my own personalized health coach, and I have my doctors that are watching my data, and it's all connected to the EHR, and it all serves it up for me in this really personalized way and monitors my health far before I ever have an issue. So that's kind of the trend.
It's one of my favorites. One of my favorites.
Me too. So I'll just give a couple highlights. Maybe I'll just start with one, actually, that I think has really, really been an advance in this space and definitely was the buzz at Health. And that was our favorite Oura Ring, Victoria. So Oura Ring has now increased, had a very highly increased valuation recently. They also came out with a massive study around blood pressure. But Victoria, I know you're a big fan. So why don't you tell us more about what's happening here?
They are now valued at $11 billion, which is wild, from their latest round of funding. And their most recent annual report just came out. Of course, we know about their brand campaign. But what's fascinating is the data that people are getting and talking about online on all platforms. People feel more informed and honestly, like, as if they have permission to pursue a healthier life. And Oura Ring does a really great job of not only like talking about this, but engaging with people as they are kind of sharing these individual case studies about the Oura Ring use. So I've had mine now for 3 months. And I love the quarterly. Actually, I've had it for longer than that, probably 6 months. But I've had it for the first quarter. I kind of, you know, went back to it to see how my stats were improving, how everything was going. And so I just wonder, like, as we're taking these devices, this information to our doctors, to our providers and our physicians, how is it going to be utilized with, you know, the care that they're providing? And even Oura Ring came out and said in a recent quote that they are going to be a healthcare resource, which is, I think, an open invitation and not something that's going to be adversarial.
I'm interested to see what that is, because I think that one area of opportunity for them is to expand their partnerships. They do have at least one or two health system partnerships, I think more on the research front. I know they have quite a few academic research partnerships as well. And I think they just partnered with, I believe it was Maven Clinic, which is a fertility company. So they've got a good bit of partnerships, but I really want to see them actually become more embedded in the healthcare landscape, not just health and wellness.
I saw that they had on my own app that they have a feature now where you can go and I think the partnership is through Quest, where you can go get your blood taken and whatever the results are from that will be inputted into the app, the data. And I believe there's a cost for that. My app was honestly kind of acting weird, but I want to go see like how much of this data is going to be helpful to me in the next 3 months, you know, next quarter. So stay tuned for updates on that one.
I love that, because lab work has really become shoppable. It's become a retail experience. So that's a really natural partnership with them, whereas other diagnostics, you know, may not make as much sense yet. So what else are you seeing in this space, Victoria?
Well, our good old friends at Google just announced their personal health coach. The preview is available here in the United States. And then Samsung in the same week announced that they are now allowing primary care appointments to be scheduled through their app. And then Apple, I just saw this on Amazon's website the other day. Apple now has a new Apple Watch that has a sleep score. So they're literally going against, right, providing another option to our friends at Oura Ring and the Garmin. So there are all these, like, lots of big tech that's coming in and continuing to find ways to, like, put health data literally in the palm of people's hands or on their finger or around their neck. And it's interesting because I own both. I have an Apple Watch and an Oura Ring, and I find both of them really, really helpful. But I have heard people say that they're leaning toward one device versus the other one because of the data that it's providing. So if anything, like, we'll see a lot, you know, a lot happening there. But if anything, I don't think, again, it isn't going to be a competition. It shouldn't be viewed as that way with our friends in health systems and hospitals. I think it's going to be a productive way to build trust with consumers because they're bringing in data that is important to them. And I think our friends should see it as, you know, a resource and an ally, not as competition.
I totally agree. Totally agree. And so we'll just sum this one up by saying this trend is 100% green right now. And that's because there's been a
Thumbs up.
yes, thumbs up. That's because there's been a lot of progress in this space since JetPublic 2030 was put on paper, and a good bit of that vision has already come true in the device and wearable space. As you were saying, Victoria, where this needs to advance in the next few years in order to stay green is that data interoperability, that ability for all of this health and wellness data to talk to healthcare data. Because right now, those still live in very separate places, and therefore are not. It's not that applicable to, you know, a doctor's appointment. At the same time, there needs to be more research and studies done around the, you know, can wellness and health data actually prevent and improve overarching health? And I think we all feel deeply in our gut that the answer is yes. But we don't have the data and the research. And so therefore, clinically, it just hasn't been put into motion quite yet. So the vision is on track, but we need more progress.
Once again, I'm keeping hope alive.
Yeah, me too. Okay, this next one is maybe not quite as hopeful or bright or sunny. We have time.
It's reality.
Yeah, reality. Yeah. So we'll, just for time's sake, we'll go through two more of these and then just quickly headline the other two. But this next one is called Constricted Consumerism. And as a reminder, this one is all about how, even though we've talked as an industry for years and years and years about consumerism and patients have more choice now and people are starting to shop healthcare like they shop retail, unfortunately, that just isn't quite true because of the way the system works. And the system works in such a way that insurers have, you know, really made a lot of the rules. And there are restrictions on how people can choose care. Everything from increased prior authorizations to what's in network and out of network to the reimbursement rates and contracting process. And so this trend suggests that consumerism would continue to stay constricted. And I'll just go ahead and give the spoiler alert that this one is green at the moment. I'll pause here for anything you want to add, and then I'll kind of give a rundown of a few things that have changed.
You know, we're seeing it happen real time. And the implications of that are scary, I think, for average everyday people. And I know that you'll mention some of the things happening, you know, across, not even politically, it's just the reality of like what's happening in our news. But I saw an article that said something like the rising cost of healthcare could be anywhere between $18,000 to $25,000 more a year for a 55-year-old person in like Iowa. And when I broke that down, that's like $2,000. A month, which is in some cases like someone's whole paycheck. So it's going to feel constricted, feels like an understatement, like suffocating people in many ways. But what I think is interesting is it feels so complex, but I think our clients and are doing a really good job of trying to simplify that and trying to connect people with people that may have the ability to have a few more options and make it a lot more clear on what those options are. I think there should be, and what people are doing, a lot more empathy and clarity in how they're talking about it from a health system and hospital perspective, and just trying to meet consumers where they are in a really tumultuous time. You see green and you're like, goodness, it feels a lot more red, but it's not something that's lost on the clients that we're working with every day.
100%. I mean, I think, as you pointed out, the number one issue, not just in healthcare, but in the country at the moment, we're in the middle of a government shutdown, right? And so it is being debated at the highest level, is healthcare and the cost of healthcare. And how people feel it, you know, varies based on location, based on socioeconomic background, all of that. But I think what no one is debating is that healthcare is costly. It is a very large line item on the overarching nation's budget, and the costs keep rising. So here's a few stats from the Kaiser Family Foundation. They did an employer health benefit survey this year and showed that not only did employer sponsor coverage costs increase by 6%, also premiums increased by 26%. So that is shocking. And then deductibles rose. So one of the ways to manage the cost is that employers are moving workers into high deductible plans, which Joe Public 2030 did mention that and predict that. Joe Public 2030 also predicted that employers would stop wanting to be in this game and have people go out on the open market to choose their own health insurance. And I don't know. I think we have seen that, happen at a small scale, but that may continue to happen as employers continue to really face the brunt of this. So, like you said, this one is green, meaning it has come true, but it sure feels red in how it feels emotionally, not just to consumers, but to your point, to healthcare organizations who are constantly having to think about their payer mix and how they ensure that they are being paid for the services that they offer.
Yep.
Okay.
Deep sigh.
Yeah, I know. We're just like, oof, sigh. Okay, let's go on to, in our third one here. This will be a little bit less depressing, perhaps.
A little lighter.
Yeah, a little bit. So this is called the Funnel Wars, and that doesn't sound light, but what we mean by the Funnel Wars is that the acuity funnel, so wellness, primary care, urgent care, even emergency care at the top, women's health, then you come down to specialty care, tertiary, quaternary, and so on and so forth. So when we say the funnel wars, what we're talking about is the top of the acuity funnel, and that there has been a battle for the relationship of the patient or of the consumer at the top of the funnel. So this is where new entrants back in 2022, 2023, Walmart Health, Walgreens, CVS Health, Optum, Teladoc, even Dollar General. I think even at the time it was like CrossFit. Everybody was playing in primary care. And as we have talked about on this podcast, over the course of 2023, 2044, and 2025, this prediction has turned yellow / sometimes even a little bit red, meaning like not on track, where folks like Walmart have closed clinics. And I think this has actually almost dropped off the radar, I think, of a lot of the healthcare discussion. But what's interesting is it might be back on the table a bit, right? So let me just get your take first, Victoria, before I give some examples of where we are today.
It's interesting because I believe people want an experience that is evolving, right? When you think about people want the same experience across everything that they're using and getting services for, getting care for. And so while we that are living and breathing in healthcare think that it is tapped, I think it's still up for grabs. So you see, as you were saying, all these big companies here in Texas, we have HEB, which I just saw as I was driving. They have a primary care and like wellness center. And you think about it, you're like, I trust HEB for a lot of things to fuel and feed my family. Let me see kind of what they're doing behind the scenes. And the reality is that it's still a really great entry point, right? If organizations have the capital to and have a desire to enter healthcare in some kind of way and become a health resource, it's a great way to do it, right? People want to have some level of connection to a PCP, even if we're hearing that they don't. They still want it because colds or just referrals, anything like that. It's great to have one partner by your side that can help you navigate just various health concerns. And what's interesting is that even it's who they're partnering with. So we're seeing these big companies, like even Samsung was partnering with a really large healthcare company. Maybe it wasn't a hospital or health system, which is fascinating, something tech adjacent. So maybe that's going to be kind of a shift in how we're seeing this top of the funnel wars. But I agree. I think you saw it too, kind of at HLTH. It is for sure like up for grabs, on and popping.
Yes. And I think it's depending on where you sit in the ecosystem. So if you sit in the health system landscape, this trend feels like, oh, that we thought that was going to be a thing for a hot minute, but it's not. And like, I'm not worried about it anymore. Now, that said, we absolutely do see some health systems that are watching like One Medical in their area because One Medical really is moving into that top of the funnel. I think there's a few other handful of new entrants in that area as well. But if you sit all day thinking about your competitors being the hospital down the road, this feels like it doesn't matter. However, if you sit anywhere else in the ecosystem, so let's say you are on the health tech side. Let's say you are even to some degree on the health services side. Let's say you live in primary care land and maybe you're at a clinic, for example. You're in retail very much, right? And I think that's what the health conference HLTH really opened up for me was it is everybody's there and they're all sharing from their vantage point. And when I got outside of my, you know, bubble, if you will, I think it made me realize that there's still a lot of advancements happening here.
I would love to know, and this could be a conversation for the next podcast, is how many medical students, people that are graduating, are going and getting jobs to be PCPs for these companies? Are they paying well because they're tech-backed? These are things that I'm wondering, because you see, even like talking to our clients, a lot of burnout, a lot of like financial challenges that these recent medical students are facing, and it's impacting in some ways, like even how they show up for their patients. And so I'm just wondering, like, how many of these disruptors, if you will, are attracting recent medical students or med school grads and getting them into a different way of providing care?
I think we should 100% go dig into that and see what the statistics show. Anecdotally, I can think of multiple physicians that I know and also physician influencers, physician voices, key opinion leaders, people that are on these conference stages that talk about how they specifically chose to work for a disruptor as opposed to a health system because they could make a bigger impact in the world. They're like, if I were a physician seeing patients all day, I would see, you know, hundreds of patients a year. If I'm working for this large corporation or this new startup or this venture, I can impact healthcare on a grand scale. And so anecdotally, I've heard a lot about that, but that just might be the louder voices. So I don't know.
It's worth a little searching.
It is.
And serving.
It is. Okay. Well, we will wrap here. We didn't touch on the two last trends, the rise of the health sex, S-E-C-T-S, which is the politicization of healthcare. I think we were able to say a few years ago, actually, that this one was green, and continues to be. No matter what side of the political aisle you sit on, I think it's very true that healthcare has been highly politicized. And then disparity dystopia, this one is also green, meaning it is happening/happened, where we're continuing to see large inequities in healthcare. I think what we didn't expect is that, you know, the way that progress would happen here would have to maybe change, given how things have played out. So, you know, this is green, but there are surprises at the same time. So with that, we will.
Feels like an episode of Black Mirror.
It does.
All of it.
All of it. So with that, we'll keep tracking these and we'll keep everyone updated on how they play out and what other trends pop up. Anything else that you want to cover, Victoria, that we haven't touched before we wrap?
I think there's a lot of things happening in our world, and I think we just got to stay all in tune with the news, yes, but also understanding, doing a little bit deeper dive into implications of all the things that we're reading about. Never take anything for face value or surface value. Learn about it yourself and be just as informed, which is what our clients are trying to help folks do. And I think it's, again, keeping our hope alive.
I love that. That's a great place to end. Yes, great call to action. So with that, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for joining, Victoria. And make sure if you're listening that you share the show with friends and colleagues, give us a review, rating, mash that like button. And until next time, don't be satisfied with the normal. Don't be satisfied with what's happening in 2025. Push the known normal, push it all the way to 2030 and beyond, and we'll talk to you soon.
3, 2, 1. Here we go!